This is the story of a young woman's desire to have a father-daughter relationship. It's titled, Death by Alcohol. Come quick if you want to see your daddy alive again. That statement sent 22-year-old Shaunette Higgins moaning and spinning aimlessly around her living room. Suddenly, she stopped, staring wide-eyed at Solomon Chandler, her father's cousin and bearer of the awful news. "What happened?" she asked, her face reflecting disbelief. "He was just here a few minutes ago." Her arm made a sweeping motion, stopping at the very spot her father had stood before leaving her apartment. I know. He was changing a flat tire when somebody banged him in the head with a claw hammer. They rushed him to Alex Memorial." Solomon lowered his voice. "He ain't expected to make it, Shaunette." And then, shaking himself, he yelled, "Now come on, we gotta go." Shaunette hurriedly put shoes on her two small sons and followed Solomon to his car. During the short ride to the hospital, she silently prayed, "Please, God, don't let him die. Give him another chance." Shaunette prayed because she wanted time to get to know this man she had been told was her daddy. She prayed because in the 5 months since she had met him, she found him to be a drunk and a liar. Still, there was so much she wanted to know that only he could answer. Where had he been while she was growing up? Was he sorry for having abandoned her? And the most important question of all, did he love her? Her thoughts then abruptly switched to the one man she had called daddy all her life, Russell Stafford. If one of her daddies had to die today, well, there was no question. Russell Stafford would live, and the man lying in the hospital fighting for his life would lose it. Shaunette left her sons, 2-year-old Trevor and 8-month-old Antonio, with relatives who had arrived ahead of her to the hospital and were seated in the visitor section near the lobby. Only close relatives were allowed in the dying man's room. Shaunette, accompanied by Solomon, rolled the elevator to the 4th floor. It was mid-July, and the temperature outside was a sweltering 92 degrees. As she entered the room, the muggy atmosphere mingled with the fresh smell of blood nauseated her. The sight of the lanky figure with blood spewing from the gaping hole in his head sent Shaunette reeling into blackness. It was the first time ever that she had fainted. She regained consciousness with someone waving smelling salts under her nose. An orderly and a nurse aide lifted her from the floor. She then crept closer to the groaning man. His eyes were stretched wide. Tears filled Shaunette's eyes as she looked on the stranger who was her father. Overwhelming compassion engulfed her. Again, she uttered under her breath, "Please, God, please." Through blurred vision, she turned to look into the faces of 4 men clad in scrubs. Standing among them was a 5th man, dressed in a business suit. She'd soon learn that he was the neurosurgeon who would perform the operation. Chauncey Williams was about to endure 6 hours of surgery without anesthesia. His blood-curdling screams would be heard from the 4th floor all the way to the 1st floor. "Why is everybody standing around?" Shaunette wondered. "Why don't somebody do something?" Shaking her head from side to side and with pleading eyes, she scanned the faces of the 5 men. "Why don't you do something?" she asked of all of them. The man in the suit stepped to her side and softly touched her arm. "We are going to do something, but you must understand. Your father is intoxicated, and..." Dr. Tomley looked into Shaunette's eyes and shook his head. He then turned and walked to the bedside of the patient. The doctor clasped his hands in front of his body and looked into Chauncey Williams' eyes as he bent slightly forward. "Mr. Williams," Dr. Tomley stopped, swallowed hard, blinked several times, then looked away momentarily. "Mr. Williams," the doctor said again. He then straightened himself and continued. "We cannot give you anesthesia because of your intoxication." He paused to let the words sink in for a few seconds, looking intently and sympathetically into Chauncey Williams' eyes. Dr. Tomley again leaned closer to the patient. In a hoarse whisper, and still holding his gaze, he asked, "Do you understand what that means?" Hearing the doctor's words, Shaunette gasped and brought her hands up to cover her mouth. The tears started to flow again, and the all-over-body weakness that preceded her fainting spell was back. She leaned against a wall to keep from going down. As the other four men left the room, she heard one of them say, "I wouldn't touch this one with a 10-foot pole. Shaunette cast a look of contempt at the man until he disappeared through the doorway. Upon the men's departure, two nurses entered the room. Dr. Tomley moved into action, barking out orders as he slipped out of his blazer. "This man will be dead in 20 minutes unless..." Dr. Tomley took Shaunette by the shoulders and looked into her eyes. "I'm going to do everything in my power to save your dad. But you have to realize it's really in the hands of a higher power." He then rushed off. Shaunette's eyes locked with those of her father's as the nurses rolled him away to surgery. With every pulse beat, blood gushed from the gaping hole in the side of his head. Shaunette returned to the lobby to get her sons and go home. She was engaged in awkward conversation with her newfound relatives when they were suddenly silenced by the screams coming from the fourth floor. The surgery had begun. Just as suddenly as the cries of pain started, they stopped, and there was deadly silence. Other visitors halted their own conversations, and in everyone's mind was the question, "My God, what is going on up there?" Shaunette wondered if the sudden quiet meant that Dr. Tomley had lost the battle he was waging to save her father's life. She suddenly had the overwhelming desire to visit her stepfather, Russell Stafford. "Daddy, I just wanted to see you, to tell you that I love you." She hugged the man who had raised her and treated her like his own daughter. It was Russell Stafford, not Chauncey Williams, who had enrolled her in kindergarten and later walked her down the aisle. It was Russell Stafford, not Chauncey Williams, who bought the birthday and Christmas presents she'd received from a father down through the years. And back in kindergarten, when Shaunette had slid off the ragged-edged merry-go-round, driving a fat splinter of wood right through the flesh of her leg, it was Russell Stafford who had taken her to the doctor. Shaunette was so glad it was not he who had been rushed to Alex's memorial earlier that day. After much prayer through the night, the call came the next morning that Mr. Williams was stable. Relief flooded Shaunette. "Thank you, God." Getting to the hospital later that afternoon, Shaunette learned that her father had no hospitalization insurance and was scheduled to be released in a couple of days. The nearest county hospital was over 100 miles away, too far for her father to travel in his weakened condition. Several of Chauncey's cousins, uncles, and friends were visiting when Shaunette arrived. These were people, some of them, relatives she'd never met. She was clumsy in her relating to them. Just as Shaunette was about to leave, planning to return later when there weren't so many others around, a nurse entered the room. "May I have your attention, please?" she began. "As you all may know, Mr. Williams will be released day after tomorrow. He is still a very sick man and will need a lot of care. We need to know with whom he'll be going home so we can give very specific instructions for his care." The room fell silent. Everyone began looking around at one another. After a few awkward minutes, the nurse said, "Maybe I should give you all a chance to discuss it and come back in a little while." She then left the room. Chauncey Williams was awake and listening to the different excuses of why none of his relatives could take him home and care for him until he recuperated. "He never done nothing for me," Shaunette thought. "Anyway, I can't take him home with me. I only got a one-bedroom apartment." She looked around at the others with raised eyebrows. They were the ones he'd spent his time with all those years he was out of her life. It was their responsibility to take him and care for him. One by one, the relatives and friends started explaining why Chauncey Williams couldn't go home with them. You know, I'd take you home with me, Chauncey, if it wasn't for my husband. Another relative referred to Shawnette's father as C. Shawnette guessed it was her father's nickname. You know, I can't take you, C, because sometimes I work 12-hour days. I wouldn't be around to give you your medicine and change your bandages. You just couldn't be there all day all by yourself. Chauncey Williams lay there wondering what was going to happen to him. All of his friends and relatives he'd run with through the years, the people he'd partied with, and those on whom he'd spent his $20,000 settlement, all had reasons why he couldn't go home with them. Shawnette watched her father's face. She knew he was hurt. How can they treat him this way? She was angry and had no regrets that she had not gotten to know her rotten relatives sooner. The nurse returned. He can go home with me, Shawnette blurted out before the nurse asked. All right, ma'am. I'll come back and explain everything you need to know to properly care for your father when he is discharged. The woman smiled at Shawnette and left the room. One of the relatives spoke up. God gonna bless you for what you're doing for your daddy? Shawnette didn't respond. She cast a scornful glance in the person's direction. She had nothing but contempt for these frauds of friends and relatives. The others in the room, feeling uncomfortable, began excusing themselves and leaving. Back at the apartment, the adjustment was difficult. Shawnette moved her father into the one and only bedroom. Her small sons each slept at opposite ends of the couch, while Shawnette made a pallet on the floor beside the sofa. She rose each morning, changed her father's hairdressing, and helped him with his hygiene. She then made breakfast, which some mornings consisted of only toast. Thank God for the bakery thrift store where bread was 8 loaves for a dollar. A few days passed before Chauncey's first visitor showed up. It was his cousin, Solomon Chandler. Shawnette ushered him into her father's room, where the two men greeted one another. Shawnette left them to return to her daily routine of housekeeping. The next time she passed her father's door, she noticed it had been pushed shut slightly, and the men were talking in hushed tones. She crept close to the door, making sure to keep out of their view. Shawnette stood eavesdropping. When she heard the rattle of paper, she bent slightly to peek through the crack at the backside of the door. She could now see what was going on. To her amazement, she watched her father bring what appeared to be a brown paper bag to his mouth and tilt his head back, keeping the bag to his mouth. He then passed it to Solomon, who did the same. At that point, she pushed the door open. "Get out," she shouted at Solomon, who had just taken a swig of Jack Daniels. Bringing the bottle down, Solomon went into hysterical coughing, having been startled by Shawnette's sudden appearance. We, Solomon started to explain, but Shawnette wasn't having it. "I said, get out." She stood in the doorway, breathing hard from anger. Solomon gathered up his things, gave a final look back at Chauncey, and left. When Solomon was gone, Shawnette stood angrily staring at her father. She remembered Dr. Tomley's last instructions to her. "Your father must never take another drink as long as he lives. It will be the death of him." Seething with anger, but keeping herself in control, Shawnette looked hard into the face of her father, said in the softest tone she could muster, "As soon as you are able, I want you out of my house." But Shawnette, Chauncey tried to explain that he would never do it again. He tried to tell her that he was an alcoholic and couldn't help himself. He didn't get the words out. She was gone. The weeks passed with Chauncey growing stronger every day. Shawnette barely spoke to him when she served his breakfast. Her kids didn't understand their mother's anger at Grandpapa. They were glad to have him around, and they were the only people with whom he interacted. Chauncey figured that Solomon had gone back and shared with the others how angry Shawnette had been, and they had all just decided to steer clear of him until he was up and around again. Chanette came home from shopping one day to find Chauncey gone. There was no note, nothing, but his things were gone. She didn't know when she'd see him again. There was an overwhelming sadness over what could have been. Despite her love and respect for her stepfather, Russell, deep down she longed for some kind of relationship with Chauncey, her eyes stung from the forming tears as she blinked hard to hold them back. The call came just 1 week later. Your father was found dead at a flop house over on the east side. The line went dead without the caller identifying herself. The newspaper account of her father's death revealed that Chauncey Williams had died of a heart attack.